Imagine a world where the beauty products you use every day are not only luxurious, but also sustainable and gender neutral. What if the industry norms were changed and we redefined ethical luxury for a greener future? Today, we're diving into the fascinating journey of Disruptor London, a brand that's doing just that. Are you ready to be inspired by the visionaries who are revolutionizing the health and beauty sector? Stay tuned because this episode is about to change the way you think about beauty and sustainability. Welcome to the Green Business All-Star Podcast, where we interview and spotlight green entrepreneurs and other environmental business leaders who are making a positive impact on our planet while making a profit. With your host, Anne Meador. In this episode of the Green Business All-Star Podcast, we welcome Sira Dishan Naidu, the co-founder of Disruptor London. Sira shares his journey from South Africa to impacting the UK's health and beauty industry and his mission to create sustainable and innovative health and beauty products. Sira shares Disruptor's unique blend of business insight and ethical values, and how as founders, him and his partner overcome the challenges of entrepreneurship with resilience and camaraderie, as well as the importance of support from fellow founders. We dive into his experience and advice regarding business accelerators, which will be helpful for anyone interested in business accelerators. Whether you are an aspiring entrepreneur, a sustainability advocate, or someone passionate about ethical beauty products, this episode is packed with insights and inspiration that you won't want to miss. So get ready to be inspired by the story of Disruptor London. Oh, and please make sure you listen to the end where I share green business ideas to help you start a green business or green your existing business. All right, let's dive in. Today on the show, we have Sira Dishan Naidu, co-founder of Disruptor London. He's originally from South Africa and is now a driving force in the UK's health and beauty industry. Alongside Juan Jose Jimenez Anka, and again, sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly, Sira co-founded Disruptor London in 2021, aiming to revolutionize the sector with sustainable practices and innovative product. Their journey began with a unique approach, blending business acumen with a commitment to ethical values and sustainability. Drawing from over two decades of experience in beauty products and software development, Sira and Juan navigated the challenges of entrepreneurship with resilience and camaraderie, inspired by monthly meetings with fellow founders, where shared insights over wine provided crucial support and perspective. They cultivated Disruptor London into a trailblazing brand. Disruptor London challenges industry norms by offering multifunctional plastic-free products and advocating for gender-neutral beauty solutions. Sira's vision and dedication drive their mission to redefine ethical luxury, emphasizing quality, sustainability, and consumer education. Well, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Anne.
I really like the idea of meeting with people over wine to discuss business and to get inspiration. That's amazing. How did you go about finding that group?
So we were on a business accelerator a few years ago. When we first started Disruptor London, in our first 6 months, we were accepted into a business accelerator because parallel to the product that we have, we were working on packaging solution. One of the hurdles or the roadblocks that we faced when we were developing all of these brilliant products were, what do we put these products in? And we went through lots of research, loads of rabbit holes of trying to understand what would be a sustainable packaging solution, and became obsessed with the end of life of packaging. That's what led us to go down this route of a business accelerator focused purely on hardware. And that was with the Central Research Laboratory in London. And we had product designers and a whole development team that helped us with this project. And as part of this project, we were fortunate enough to have a wonderful cohort that we now call our friend. And we get together almost every other month, or at least once a quarter, for what we call our evening. And it's wine, wind, and win. We win a lot, we drink a lot of wine, and we celebrate our win. It's been great because both Juan and myself, our first time as entrepreneurs, it's very lonely. It's nice when you have supportive friends and family around you, but they don't truly understand what this journey is like, but other founders do. So having this community and having the support of other founders, where you can drink lots of wine, you can win, and you can also celebrate your win, has been great. And we've been very fortunate and blessed to have this from the beginning of our journey.
That's great. I'd love that. So your partner, Juan, I'm sorry, let me back up. So I'm interested because one of you apparently has background in the beauty industry and the other one has a background in tech. Which side do you come from?
So my background is in chemical engineering and I fell into the beauty industry purely by chance about 24 years ago, working on a beauty counter for Clinique in South Africa. And I was able to come to the UK with them and just progressed and worked in very loads of different roles with the Estee Lauder companies, LVMH, Too Faced Cosmetics, Manor Products in New York, etc. A load of vast experience in over 2 decades. And Juan's a software engineer, and he developed the tech side of the business, everything from our website, which is custom built, and all of the great user experience and navigation. He's responsible for that. And I take care of product development, sales, and marketing.
Okay. Sounds like a perfect partnership. You both have your own skills that you add. And I'm sure one's weaknesses is another one's strength. So that's great. So being in the industry so long, I guess you know the secrets, right? The dirty secrets, as they say, or it says on your website. And is your goal to try to rectify those? What are the negatives of mainstream beauty brands?
So I'd say, I'm very fortunate to have spent all of this time in the industry. And me being this empty sponge, I've learned so much. Every role that I've had in my career, it was always about some sort of progression and learning something different or acquiring a new set of skills. So I'm very grateful for that. But with that also comes a lot of understanding of what is our part to play in this world when it comes to the climate crisis. So during COVID was that moment of reflection for both Juan and myself on this is where our careers are. We were very comfortable, both of us on great careers, great salaries, a good lifestyle. But we also thought about what does the next 20 years look like for us? We're not just business partners, we're partners in life as well. And we thought we'd like to really be in charge of this narrative of reshaping what our next 20 years would look like together and using or honing in on this experience that, or combined experience that we both have. We thought beauty is something that I know and it's something that we can make a meaningful impact in. So being that insider, we understand and a lot of the insight and intelligence is telling us as well that the beauty industry is responsible for a lot of waste and contributing to climate change. I'm not going to bore you with too many stats, but one that really sticks out for me is the beauty industry produces 120 billion units of plastic packaging each year, and less than 12% of that is being recycled. So that in itself is telling you this is what's happening and we're not recycling all that we're producing. We're going to end up with a lot of excess, and that excess is going to go somewhere. It's being incinerated, it's being shipped off to third world countries. And with my experience of traveling around the world with my jobs, but also socially, I've seen that impact firsthand. I've seen landfills in Tunisia. I've seen beaches clogged with plastic waste in South Africa, in other parts of North Africa. And it's disheartening. It's upsetting, but it's also a problem that third world and developing world countries have inherited from the first world. We cannot change the recycling infrastructure that's failing us. It's going to take a long time for that to improve. But what happened in the interim, as we're going through this transition where there's great innovation in terms of new plastics and new materials and bio-based alternatives, our infrastructures don't allow for it. If anything, it's infecting the current infrastructure for recycling. So for us, as founders, we are also innovators. We have a responsibility to provide more responsible alternative for customers. With all of this knowledge that I've had from my industry on what's broken and what's dirty, the irony is that an industry that exists to house ourselves and clean ourselves, but it's making the planet really dead. And when we spent close to 2 years on product development, going down lots of different rabbit holes of learning and challenging ourselves and asking lots of questions and testing with humans and talking to people in the public, just to ensure we are on the right track. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. And we're going against the grain and challenging that kind of status quo or narrative on what beauty should be. And for us, about doing more with less.
Got it. So let's dive into your actual product line. You have a unique product line as far as from the sustainability aspect, but it's also gender neutral beauty solutions. Is that right?
Yeah. So with the product line, we have what we call our Capsule Collection, primarily in cleansing. And the reason we have this is because we struggle so much with finding responsible packaging solutions that will not end up in a landfill. So all of these products is what we call naked. They don't have any plastic, glass, or aluminium packaging. They are solid format concentrated bars that are multi-use or multi-purpose and combines the functions of shampoo, conditioner, cleanse, and shave. They're completely plant-based, so none of the ingredients have any microplastic or any relationship with fossil fuel. Everything has naturally derived and organic where possible. And we're also using upcycled ingredients to make this truly circular. But beauty, particularly when it comes to cleansing, shouldn't be gender who's making these rules. So we have the opportunity of rewriting things from a blank canvas. And we wanted to have a more multi-purpose and multi-use product to help people reduce their complex routine. Because for us, we recognize that the plastic pollution or plastic crisis is a big contributor to climate change, but that's not the only thing that we want to tackle with this brand. We care a lot about water preservation. So we remove water from our formulas, and by removing water from formulas, we have more concentrated format that circumvent unnecessary packaging. For example, a typical liquid shampoo would contain up to 8% of water. And it just doesn't make sense to be using a watered-down product when we're in the shower anyway. Packaging that's probably coming from one continent, shipped here, being filled here, and transported to another continent. And when we look at the carbon impact or the environmental impact on just moving product, moving water, it just doesn't make sense. So what we want to do is just completely reimagine and redesign things with new lenses and thinking or looking at it through those lenses of circular that's practical and that makes sense. So the two issues would be the plastic waste and the water scarcity, but the whole climate crisis is an overconsumption problem. So it's great for transitioning people from plastic into solid, but we also don't want them to have several solid bars in their bathroom because it does become confusing after a while. And especially a family, and we lead busy lives. So we wanted to redesign the shampoo bar to be multi-use. So you get more uses out of it. It's better for you and it's better for the planet.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. You said how much water comes in typical shampoo percentage?
So a typical liquid shampoo would contain up to 80% of water. And when we're looking at any product, if you look at the packaging and the ingredient or the inky list. The first, it's listed in order of concentration. So the first ingredient is often aqua. In body washes and conditioners, it's even higher. So it makes you wonder, if plastic is not being recycled or less than 12% is being recycled, what happens to all of our shower gel containers, shampoo containers? And often these containers as well, they're designed in such a way to appeal to customers on a shelf that they contain multiple different components and sometimes labeled as well. And if these are not separated and if they get a little fiddly, there's just no way that it's going to be recycled. So we recognize that this problem exists. Not everybody does, but as an entrepreneur, we take this knowledge and we feel that, okay, we can do something different and useful and provide them more responsible solutions.
So many things I want to dig in on that. So let's start from the beginning, from the manufacturing process and circularity and using upcycled ingredients. Can you talk about that? What kind of upcycled ingredients are you using? Where do you get them? How do you find them? How do you know they work?
Loads of great questions then. We just don't have enough time. But okay. When we started off, we had a purpose and a vision for this business. And we knew that the issues that we wanted to tackle would be overconsumption and plastic, as well as the water scarcity. We didn't have a product. The product came afterwards. But when we started building our product, almost like the framework was done in terms of what we will not touch, in terms of ingredients, and that anything that has coming from fossil fuel. We are not touching plastic, anything that has microplastic. We are not using synthetic ingredients. So everything would be naturally derived, organic where possible, fair trade. So the provenance and understanding the traceability of all of these ingredients was very important for us. And we're still on that journey because we'd like to get to a point where everything is local. But living on a little island like the UK, not really possible. So as we were building out our formulas, we were also constantly looking at what innovations are out there. And we've been fortunate to come across some ingredients through our partnership with the Upcycle Beauty Company, upcycled hemp oil. So it's a byproduct of food waste from the hemp industry. But there's this oil that's extracted, a coal process that comes out from there. And this oil is an active oil. It has a standardized level of CBD and it's great for soothing stressed out skin and scalp. And we have a bar within our range of products that's called Calm. And it's intended for consumers that do have issues with sensitivity in their skin as well as their scalp. So when we're building our formulas, it's about targeting or problem solution ethos, but targeting different concerns consumers face with their skin, their hair, and their scalp. So that's one example. When we were building our detox bar, we recognized that detox is going to be a bar that's all about clarifying. It's anti-blemish, it's oil controlling, it's decongesting for the skin and for the scalp. And product that work in synergy with that would be non-comedogenic oil that's great for oilier skin, like Tamanu oil. But then we also used activated charcoal, and then we came across the charcoal crush that's part of the Upcycle Beauty Company as well. And the charcoal crush is a byproduct of oak fencing in the UK. So it's a local product. It has very similar absorbent properties as activated charcoal, but because of the upcycle nature of it, we're really nodding to the circularity in how we want to build our product. But the list, it doesn't stop there. We're constantly looking at new ways of improving or elevating these formulas that we have by incorporating more local or upcycled ingredients.
And these formulations are your formulations? Did you had experience from your past life formulating?
Yeah, so my chemistry background came in very useful. Having that background working with manufacturing as well was useful. But I must say, during COVID, when we had this great deal of time, think about how we wanted to do this. At first, we considered white label, that where you would buy off formulas and from a catalog and put your brand on it. We explored that for a while, and it's not something that we felt entirely comfortable with because we wanted to make these formulas really shine and tell a story, but also be really functional. So we upskilled, did several courses on organic skin and hair care formulation to get to this point where we were comfortable. And then, of course, when we go through all of the testing and safety kind of route to get these formulas ready for market, we partnered with cosmetic chemists as well.
Oh, okay. Are your products fragrance free, or do you add fragrance to it? I know that's a bad word sometimes, saying fragrance, because it's such a generic term and manufacturers can get away with just calling it fragrance and you don't know what that is, right? Kind of chemicals are in there, but not that you're using chemicals.
Well, we don't use any artificial fragrance in our formulas, and we also don't use any fragrance oil in our formulas. What we have is a functional bar where every ingredient supports the function or the purpose of that bar. And what we do use to scent the bars, but also to provide a therapeutic function, are essential oils of organic nature. So for instance, in the Calm bar, we know this is a product that's suited for people with sensitivity and redness in their complexion. Typically, they wouldn't want an imposing or very strong fragrance in their bar. They'd want something that's a little soothing and calming and grounding. So we use organic cedarwood, Atlas cedarwood essential oil in there, but we also use it in a smaller concentration than we use in any of the other bars. So every scent has a specific function. With our flake-free bar that's designed for people that suffer with dry, itchy, and flaky scalp or symptoms associated with eczema and dandruff, we use essential oils of peppermint and rosemary because those are cooling and more stimulating for the follicle.
I'm looking at one of the statistics you have on your website saying that one bar equals 70 washes, which equals 3 plastic bottles. That's great. That's something to be proud of. That's incredible, actually. 3 plastic bottles.
So we use FSC cardboard paper because for legal requirements, we obviously need to have the labeling on the product. It's the cardboard that's recyclable, but no physical packaging like plastic, glass, or aluminium.
So you don't have any problems with moisture getting in there and starting to dissolve or activate?
We do sell storage solution for these bars when you're using it. We do storage cases and travel cases that are made from cornstarch. It's polylactic acid. It's not a plastic. And that is compostable. It's great for protecting your bar between uses because when you're using solid bar, it's important to allow it to dry between uses to get the most out of that bar. So we do provide those. Yeah, so the impact on these bars is with it being so concentrated, you don't need to use too much. And when we were building these formulas as well, we did a lot of research with consumers that have either experienced solid format shampoos before and tried to understand what their pain points were. One of the pain points was they wanted to transition to something more sustainable, but they didn't like the fact that the bars didn't lather enough. And others complained that they didn't like the fact that their hair didn't feel comfortable or it was a bit draggy afterwards. So when we built these formulas, the lather and that bouncy, clean feel that you have in your hair was something that we worked really hard to achieve.
So you have great selling points. How do you stand out from other companies? You know, you're not the only one out there trying with the same kind of mission. But what makes you different? How do you stand out? How do you market yourself? Like, how do you get people to know about your product and how great it is?
That's a very good question. And I don't honestly have the answer to that because we're still learning and we're trying our best. I'd say when it comes to our product, what really differs from everyone else in this category is we're the only brand that's doing the organic multi-purpose bars. That combines the functions for shampoo, conditioner, cleanser, and shave. With a lot of the competitors, you'd need to have separate product to do that. Tell our story and where we show up in terms of event, pop-up, and how we're engaging with our consumers. I think it's quite different. And we get to lend our personality to it that way. We tend to focus a lot on doing things in the climate and environmental space, whether it's a pop-up event. We have celebrated the Earth Fest in the UK in April, and we were one of the few beauty brands that popped up there. But it's really about helping people transition from old habits into more eco-friendly alternatives. So we meet our customers where we think they may be. So that was one example. We will be popping up at a vegan festival in a couple of weeks. We know in the last 2 years, we've been spending a lot of time learning exactly who our customers are so we can get in front of them in the right places. So if consumers are looking for these alternatives, and they might not find them in a supermarket or the local drugstore, we'll try to see them at a festival. And thanks to people like you, these are good vehicles to get our message out there as well.
I'm always interested in social media tactics that people are using, specifically influencers and what people's experience is with that. I was wondering if you've gone down that route.
We've not fully seen the potential of doing that because we've been quite intentional about going slow. Some of the activity we've done with influencers or key opinion leaders has been good. Blogs has driven a decent amount of traffic. We're currently working on a few projects with some influencers for the second half, and we'll be looking at working with TikTok creators as well to further amplify this method. But I think it's something that we'll need to really work harder on, because so far a lot of it has been organic.
Organic's great. Best way to go if you can. Is it just, so how many people in your organization? The two of you and how many other people?
So it's the two of us. What we're doing is we're a self-funded business and we're trying to keep it as lean as we can for as long as we can. So what we typically do is when we're working on project or any deliverable, we would work with third party freelancers and agencies. That's not really on our payroll, but we do it on a project basis. Yeah, it's also, we started this business just after, we started working on it during COVID. We launched after COVID and things are quite precarious at the moment with the economic climate. We've got our elections coming up. So it's very similar to what you're experiencing there. And the whole landscape for investment for consumer packaged goods and in beauty as well is very different from what it was 5-10 years ago. So we know that this is something we want to do for the long term, and it's going to be slow burner. So we set up ourselves to do this in a very like calculated and measured way. We're not pushing too much out into building a big team, etc., till we know that this is sustainable growth through certain channels. That's going to come in the next couple of years.
So I was going to ask you about plastic-free July. What in the world is plastic-free July?
Oh, that's a good question. There's so many different days and months and weeks in the year that we need to celebrate now. Plastic-free July started some time ago. For us, we're plastic-free every day. It's not something that we focus too much on. And we're not one of these brands that just jumps on a trend or bandwagon. We feel that we have something to say about the use of plastic and how it's choking our waterways, and we need to move away from it. We say that every single day. But the good thing is when everybody else is talking about it during the month of July, driving some awareness. And that's where we shine, because we are the brand of choice.
Okay, I had never heard of Plastic Free July. Is this something that's in the UK? Is this something I should know about? Is this international? Where does this come from? Do you know?
I think it's international. Oh, yeah.
I'm with you. It should be plastic free every day. But speaking of plastic free and plastic pollution, I noticed on your website that you're a supporter of Clean Hub. And I had the founder of Clean Hub on the podcast not too long ago, Joel, and what a fantastic organization that is.
Yeah, so Joel and I did a podcast, LinkedIn Live, just before Christmas. It must have been 2 days before Christmas last year. Great partners. We actually signed up with Clean Hub before we even started selling our products or launching this company, because I was so inspired of what they're doing as an organization. Even though we're a plastic rebrand and even though we're waterless, we have inherited this problem, and we're also contributed to this problem as individuals. We decided, Juan and I, that one of the key things that we wanted to do from the social and environmental side was support these organizations. So we donate a percentage of our sales toward the retrieval of plastic before it even gets to the ocean, through partners like Clean Hub, and we do this in Indonesia with them.
And I see on your website too that you do 1% for the planet. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So with 1% for the planet, it's also working with environmental charities. So there's a lot that we also do ad hoc. Last year we worked on, because we're a brand that for people and planet, and one of the charities that we felt quite close to was the Eve Appeal in the UK, where they are generating and creating awareness around the 5 gynecological cancer charities. So for the month of May, we worked with them on raising funds, but also using our platform through social, as well as in physical events and panel discussions, talking about that charity.
What is the name of that organization again? I didn't quite catch it, or could you spell it for me so I can write it down?
Called the Eve Appeal. Appeal.
Gotcha. I'm going to move on you to help our listeners who may be interested in starting a business, not necessarily a beauty business, but it could be. I asked you about how you stand out. There's definitely room for all kinds of brands everywhere. We need more. What kind of help what kind of resources or information or advice would you like to share with our listener who wants to start a sustainable business?
I say, you want to start something, do it. I think we can never have enough people trying to do good things in the world, and there's space for everyone. I think for us, when we started, we learned so much because we don't come from entrepreneurial families or backgrounds. It was the first time we did this. So having each other as that support was incredible. But we very quickly grew our community and our own network of other founders or people in the business that could help support. It's incredible how many people are willing to help, whether it's lending an ear, offering a little bit of support or an introduction. You could be the founder of a business, but you cannot do it by yourself. You need people around you. And we're also very fortunate where there's a lot of great resources and tools out there when we're building a business. 20 years ago, CSR, like social responsibility guidelines, mm-hmm. didn't exist. ESG didn't exist. B Corp didn't exist. We have all of these great things now. The SDGs didn't exist. So now we have all of these. We need to apply these frameworks on what sustainable business models and business practices look like to us. There's also very blurry in terms mm-hmm. of what sustainability is.
Yeah.
Not regulated the way it could. So it's very important that if this is a route that you wanted to take, to define it for yourself and share that with your audience so people understand the decisions you're making and why you're doing what you're doing.
That's great advice.
LinkedIn is also incredibly useful to network, to learn, to join some closed group. And everyone, I must say, being in the space, a lot of founders.
So you said you started off in an accelerator program. Can you share with our listeners exactly how that helped you? What does that do for you? We hear about it all the time, but actually being in it, like, how did they help you?
So that particular accelerator, which was the first one that we did, was great because we were working on a packaging project or hardware, and having the support of product designers and a project manager was great. The accelerators overall, most of them typically have a program where they talk about your TAM, SAM, SUM. So it's understanding the size of the market, the potential, and how you achieve that. There's business planning and modeling, financial modeling, a little bit of investment readiness. So most of the program teach you that. So it's good in terms of providing a bit of foundation and some framework or things that you might not necessarily have the skill set to do, and they could be blank spaces. So for that sake, it's great, but it's also good for opening yourself up into other communities and environment where you get to learn from other people through their experiences. We completed a second accelerator more recently, and this was purely for impact brands and in the consumer goods space. And with Disruptor London, we are very much about driving impact and effecting some kind of change in consumers' shopping behavior and habits, but also communicating the impact. For example, the impact of the one bar diverting 3 plastic bottles from a landfill and not using any water, that is quite impactful. So how do we communicate that or articulate that effectively? These be very good for that.
And how would people find an accelerator program close to them? Google, local small business association, like over here. How did you go about finding these programs? Google?
Sometimes they find you, sometimes you find them. But once you start looking, and the way the algorithm works, particularly on meth, things pop up, and as well as Google, things pop up all the time. But I'd say a starting point is most big corporations, Microsoft, Amazon, they offer programs. There's banks that offer programs like Royal Bank of Scotland here in the UK, Barclays, Lloyd in the UK as well. They are often working with smaller organizations that they could help with funding and a lot of the resources pushed into building these programs. And then there's independent that's running accelerators in tech, in climate, in impact. So there's a lot that's out there. Imagine in the US, there's a ton more than there is here.
Now, is this something that you have to pay for, or you get it for free, or do they pay you to be part of it?
It varies. Some accelerators are equity free. Sometimes they take a little bit off your business because they're investing so much of resource into you. Sometimes it could be a cash transaction, but it varies. And there's a lot of free ones out there as well.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing that with us.
But accelerators aren't for everyone as well. And it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's very much about, firstly, understanding what you want to do and where you fit. The accelerator is there to enhance or help you accelerate your idea. The accelerator is not about you going in to start something and build an idea from scratch. The onus needs to come from the founder and use the accelerator as a vehicle to get further.
All right, great. And do you have any resources you'd like to share with our listeners that can help them in their journey? Oh, before we get into that, I wanted to ask you too. You said you took a formulation class when you first started your business. Is this something you did in person or did you do that online?
It was during COVID, so I was doing a lot online. Also with design, circular design, there's loads of resources online that people can find. Juan as well, with his software engineering, he learned a new language with Rust. And if you have the will and the skill, learning, and we're always telling ourselves, if we don't know something, there's a way to find out and learn.
Yeah.
But in terms of resources, I'd say if anybody wants to reach out, connect on LinkedIn or Instagram, and I'm always happy to help or push people in the right direction.
Great. And so those are two ways that they could get in contact with you. And then your website, you want to share that address with them?
Yeah, so the website is disruptor.london. It's very simple, disruptor.london. And you've got the link for all my socials.
Yeah, and that'll all be in the show notes, of course. And then is there anything else you want to say before we end our conversation?
No, I think one of like our biggest learnings with this journey was we wish we could have started sooner. And we also, right now, when we're doing things, we wish we could execute quicker on a lot of things because you can always make mistakes and then fix it and learn. But the longer you wait to start, the harder it becomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. And one last thing I'm going to throw in is that you have a 20% discount on your products on your website. I guess that's if you subscribe to your newsletter and you get the 20%, right?
Yes.
All right. Great. I thank you so much for your time and your patience and the great answers you gave us and all the knowledge that you've shared with our listeners.
Thank you, Anne. It was lovely talking with you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed Disruptor London's innovative journey that's not just redefining beauty, but also setting new standards for sustainability and ethical luxury. From the challenges of entrepreneurship to the triumphs of creating multifunctional plastic-free products, Sarah's story is a testament to the power and vision and dedication to his mission. Here are some key takeaways from the episode. Sustainable practices are not just a trend, but a necessity. Innovation thrives on resilience and collaboration, and most importantly, the future of beauty is inclusive and green. Don't forget the importance of community. Having a support network of fellow entrepreneurs is invaluable. Regular meetings with other founders provided Sarah and Juan with critical support, insights, and a sense of camaraderie. Creativity and innovation are key to solving complex problems. Disruptor London's approach to sustainable packaging solutions demonstrates how innovative thinking can lead to impactful business practices. Integrating ethical values with business acumen is essential for long-term success. Sarah's commitment to sustainability and ethical luxury sets a strong example of how businesses can thrive while adhering to core values. The demand for inclusive and gender-neutral products is rising. Disruptor London's advocacy for gender-neutral beauty solutions highlights the significance of inclusivity in modern business practices. Redefining luxury to include ethical and sustainable practices can create a unique market position. Disruptor London's emphasis on ethical luxury shows that consumers are increasingly valuing sustainability and ethics in their purchasing decisions. Collaboration with other businesses and participation in programs like business accelerators can provide valuable resources and support. These lessons emphasize the importance of resilience, community, innovation, and ethical practices in building a successful green business. And as promised in this episode and all episodes of the Green Business All-Star podcast, here are some green business ideas that you may want to start or implement in your existing business. I don't usually provide this many examples, but today I'm going to provide you with 9 that came from this episode. Just shows you how much value was packed into this. All right, first, sustainable beauty products. You could develop a line of multifunctional plastic-free beauty products that emphasizes ethical luxury and sustainability. How about offering eco-friendly packaging solutions, which is an ongoing theme in this podcast? You could create a business focused on designing and manufacturing sustainable packaging for beauty and health products, just like Disruptor's dedication to eco-friendly packaging. Gender-neutral cosmetics. Launch a brand of beauty products that cater to all genders, promoting inclusivity and breaking traditional industry norms. How about starting a sustainability consulting firm for beauty brands? Could offer consulting services to beauty and health brands looking for to transition to more sustainable practices. You could leverage insights from Disruptor London's journey. Sustainable beauty tech development. Develop tech solutions for the beauty industry, such as custom-built websites or user experience enhancements that prioritize sustainability. How about an ethical luxury subscription box? Create a subscription box service featuring high-quality, sustainable, and gender-neutral beauty products from various ethical brands, such as Disruptor London. You could always organize green business networking events. Organize regular meetups or networking events for green business entrepreneurs, similar to Disruptor London's wine, winch, and win evenings. I love that. Wine, winch, and win evenings. Where you can share valuable insights and foster collaboration. How about sustainable product development workshops? You could host workshops and training sessions for aspiring entrepreneurs on developing sustainable beauty and health products. You could draw from the challenges and solutions discussed in this podcast. And lastly, how about establishing a green business accelerator program specifically for startups in the beauty and health sectors that focus on sustainability and innovation, similar to the Central Research Laboratory in London that Sarah and Juan participated in? All right. Thanks for listening. You can contact and follow Sarah via social media at Disruptor London on Instagram, X, Facebook, and LinkedIn. To get the show notes, please go to greenbizpod.com, GREENBIZPOD.com, and then /disruptor, DISRUPTOR, and you can get all the links. And a huge thank you to Sarah for sharing his incredible insights and inspiring journey with us. And of course, thank you to our listeners for tuning in and supporting the Green Business All-Star podcast. Your engagement and passion for green business are what makes this show possible. As we go, remember that each step towards sustainability, no matter how small, makes a significant impact. Stay inspired, keep pushing the boundaries, and together, let's build a greener future. Power to the people, planet, and making a profit. Until the next episode, this is Ann Meador encouraging you to stay green and be a business all-star. Take care and see you in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening to the Green Business All-Star Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, like, and or follow the show on your favorite podcast app. Also appreciate it if you would leave us a review to help us share our mission and the mission of our guests to make the world a better place while sustaining a comfortable lifestyle. Peace to the planet, people, and making a profit.